See You Now is a podcast highlighting the innovative and human-centered solutions that nurses are coming up with to solve for today's most challenging healthcare problems. Created in collaboration with Johnson & Johnson and the American Nurses Association.
Creating structures and resources that support the workforce is no longer optional. It is essential for recruitment, retention, and also the organization's viability.
We realized that in order for us to really achieve the type of outcomes that we were looking for, we really had to understand the relationship of nurse well-being with patient care outcomes.
We had a really full, well-rounded well-being program. We just need to work on pulling those pieces together even more.
So we're constantly looking at how can we evolve and how can we meet the needs of our team members.
It's really exciting to see the outcomes of the work and the pilot work being done.
We actually refer to positive practice environments, which is tied to well-being, as the other PPE, because it's just as essential in protecting our workforce. Unlike the masks and the gowns, where we can easily see when we're running short, burnout and well-being is not something that we can easily see. It does require constant assessment and constant support of our workforce.
Welcome to See You Now. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, executive producer for See You Now. I wanted to start this episode of See You Now with a little bit of a personal story. When I was 10 years old, I woke one morning to my father weeping by my bed. As he told me, my aunt, his sister, had died in a car accident that night. My aunt was a nurse. She wasn't scheduled to work on that particular night because it was her birthday. But her hospital was short-staffed, so they called. She went in. She wasn't rested. She hadn't planned to work. But she went in anyway. In putting this episode together, I thought a lot about that night. And I wondered, what if the organization she worked for had treated her well-being as essential? Not as a luxury, not as a scheduling inconvenience, but as foundational to safe care. Would the phone have rung at all? I don't have that answer. But I do know that my aunt's story echoes something much larger, something healthcare professionals have been warning us about for years. Right now, more than half of nurses in the United States report feeling burned out most days, and nearly two-thirds are experiencing compassion fatigue. More than 138,000 nurses have left the workforce since 2022, citing stress and burnout as top reasons. And a landmark 2024 meta-analysis published in JAMA, drawing on 85 studies and nearly 290,000 nurses across 32 countries, found that nurse burnout is directly associated with more medication errors, more patient falls, more hospital-acquired infections, more adverse events, as well as lower patient satisfaction and lower nurse-assessed quality of care. And burnout is not the only threat to the people keeping our health system afloat. Reported assaults on nursing personnel rose by almost two-thirds between 2019 and 2023, a steady, troubling upward trend. And research consistently shows that these incidents are vastly underreported, with many nurses saying they don't report because they don't expect anything to change, revealing a landscape that can feel unsustainable. In this third episode in our Safer Together series, we zero in on the practice environment and on one of the most powerful levers available to health system leaders, well-being excellence. Patricia McGaffigan, the Vice President of Safety at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, sits down with Christine Pepico, the Senior Director of the American Nurses Credentialing Center's Pathway to Excellence and Well-Being Excellence programs. Together, Christine and Patricia unpack what well-being really means in a healthcare organization and what it doesn't. They challenge the myths of individual resilience, confront the systemic roots of burnout, and introduce the ANCC Well-Being Excellence Credential, a first-of-its-kind framework that goes beyond nurses to the entire workforce and beyond clinical settings to any organization that employs at least one nurse. We'll also hear from two of the six pilot organizations that helped shape this credential. From Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., Simi King, Director of Nursing Education and Professional Development, shares how her team built well-being into the very center of their professional practice model, and what it looks like to have a dedicated nurse whose entire role is supporting the well-being of her nursing colleagues. And from BayCare Health System in Tampa Bay, Florida, Chief Team Resources Officer Nikki Daly, Chief Nurse Executive Trish Schakowsky, and Nurse Well-Being Lead Rocky Hawk describe why it's so important to their organization to be part of the pilot program. Their stories are proof points of what it looks like when organizations decide that the well-being of its workforce is not a project, but a purpose.
Well, Christine, I thought I would pull out a reflection on how this all comes together so that our listeners can be aligned in the conversation and how it started and where it's at today. And I thought I would reflect very briefly on my very first day of work at the National Patient Safety Foundation. This was back in 2012. And NPSF is now a part of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. But the very first two people I met on day one on the job were Drs. Lucian Leap and Paul O'Neill. The reason why I met them on day one was because it was an expert convening of our Lucian Leap Institute panel, which created the report Through the Eyes of the Workforce, Creating Joy, Meaning, and Safer Healthcare. And this report is largely credited with one of the major inflection points in recognizing the critical and inextricable link between the safety of in the experience of patients and the safety in the experience of the healthcare workforce. And that report does state how inextricable that link is, and that unless caregivers are given the protection, the respect, and the support they need, they're more likely to make errors, fail to follow safe practices, and not work well in teams. And we know from a nursing profession that we've been at this work for a while, and that's what we're going to illuminate today in our conversation. So I thought I would begin with that framing to be able to emphasize how all that we'll talk about today relates to what our workforce needs to bring out the best in their ability to provide the highest quality and safest care every day. Christine, I think it's important for us to maybe just put some context in place here about what gets in the way of well-being. And there's a quote that was originated from the early 1900s that Muhammad Ali kind of popularized. And that quote is, "It isn't the mountains ahead to climb that wear you out, it's the pebble in your shoe." And I know that we have both respectively in our work been focusing in on helping identify and provide toolkits for organizations to be able to address both. The pebbles in our shoes I see as some of the smaller, often overlooked issues that can just drain the energy and really get in the way, sometimes more so than the bigger goals. And I'd love for you to comment a little bit more on how you see this playing out in the context of well-being.
Sure, Patricia. And well-being is such a big concept. When we talk about well-being in the workplace, a common myth that some organizations have is the approach is usually, how can our employees improve their own well-being? That it's the individual's responsibility. I can't tell you how many times I still hear from organizations that they feel by offering things such as webinars, apps, or relaxation rooms, that they're doing enough. And these offerings, even though they're great, they don't really get to the root of things and don't truly address the factors that lead to burnout. What we know about burnout is that it typically results from systemic, structural, or organizational cultural issues. People are not burning out simply because of their inability to manage stress. It usually stems from chronic pebbles in their shoes, as you said, in unhealthy work environments. And that's the thing that truly impacts the well-being of the workforce. Things such as excessive workloads, incivility, bullying, administrative burden, those are the things that truly impact the well-being of our workforce right now.
Thank you so much, Christine. That's a really helpful framing. And while we're at it and we're talking about some myths here, I want to throw out something about that R word, resilience. And I wonder if you might be able to provide some perspectives on that term and what might be somewhat unhelpful about some of the framing. You started to allude to that when you talked about the individual, but maybe you could help us think through what resilience really is all about here.
Well, you know, resilience is actually a term that we don't even try to use because during the pandemic, clinicians initially embraced the term resilience, but over time, the term that when it's used is leading to frustration and anger. People are no longer willing to continue working in unmanageable conditions. Nurses no longer want the assumption or the expectation that they will tough it out. They are done with the pressure being placed on them while ignoring systemic issues. So we stay away from resilience because the message it's conveying is that nurses should be okay with the unrealistic expectations.
I think that's such a good point, Christine. The importance of maybe retiring the way that we have thought about resilience as a personal trait that we just have to make more of for individuals and in individuals. And resilience, as we talk about when we look at system resilience for safety, it isn't about absorbing harms or someone's ability to tolerate harms. It's really about creating some of the systems that don't inflict harm in the first place, and that create work environments that can be optimized for our colleagues across the workforce. So, I want to turn the light bulbs up a little bit here and just spend a bit of time building on some of the concepts that you brought out before. What is getting in the way of well-being in the workforce, Christine?
So one of the pesky pebbles that we refer to in the shoes of the workforce, I think, is the growing administrative burden that takes the time and attention away from direct patient care. Nurses spend significant portions of their shifts completing documentation, navigating multiple electronic systems, and meeting regulatory and organizational requirements. And of course, all of these tasks are important for compliance and reporting, but it can also create frustration and moral distress because they're competing with the time that they want to spend with their patients at the bedside. And sometimes these tasks are overly time-consuming or duplicative. They not only slow down care delivery, but it also contributes to burnout, frustration, and disengagement with the staff. So those are some of the things that add up over time. And then there are some bigger issues that you can refer to as boulders. And a high workload is one of them because that's also leading to moral distress when clinicians are unable to provide the care that they know their patients deserve. And I know that even when we looked at the different well-being concepts, some of the things are just basic needs that we must provide our nurses. And one of them is their ability to be able to recharge even during work hours and being able to take uninterrupted meal breaks. And those things are not happening. So these are the kinds of things that I actually remind organizations because it's one of the most valued by employees and the biggest opportunity for most organizations. I still remember that when we did a survey during one of our ANCC conference that's attended by 14,000 nurses, when we asked them, out of all the well-being initiatives that you guys have at the organization, which one do you find most meaningful? They said flexible scheduling is one, and then second is having the ability to recharge during work hours. So I always remind the nursing leaders that I talk to that before they even invest on the shiny well-being initiatives to make sure that you know they're able to meet the basic needs of their nurses. Because let's face it, even if you have the relaxation room, what's the probability that that's going to be used if they can't even step away for half an hour to take a meal break?
Exactly. And we're putting band-aids on major wounds here. We might feel good about patching things together, but not necessarily solving them. But one of the things that I love that you mentioned was around the pebbles in the shoes process. And you distinguish between pebbles and boulders. And I think that's an important part of this conversation. I know many of our IHI community use the Joy in Work framework, which provides a practical way to be able to identify and address pebbles in their shoes. And I think that has also been well illustrated across a range of healthcare applications. But fundamentally, a lot of what we are talking about, to your point, things like workplace violence and unprofessionalism, and a sense that the workforce might be feeling a little bit gaslit in the process, those are symptoms of typically much bigger system and cultural related aspects. And again, we've got some super common themes across what we know and have learned about in the patient safety world as well. So I think naming those and helping people understand that sometimes we have to look for different solution sets makes an important distinction in whether or not we're really solving a problem or making ourselves feel good about thinking we're solving a problem. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the things that I talked about that cause disengagement and also frustration require systemic change. It requires intentional leadership, policy changes, and a daily commitment to creating a supportive work environment. No organization is perfect. Every single one of them will have very similar challenges, but it's the way the administration and healthcare leaders are addressing them and listening to the workforce that truly makes a big difference and what differentiates those organizations.
Right. The Safer Together National Action Plan actually framed out four critical domains that required leadership and system level attention. And they include culture, leadership and governance, patient and family engagement, learning systems, and workforce safety and well-being. And I wanted to note that because the tool itself provides a good framework for being able to think about the world we're talking about today very holistically. But ultimately, some of the things that we've learned that I'm sensing in my interface with ANCC and the Pathway to Excellence as a well-being commissioner are that in many cases, our executives, our healthcare leaders may not even have safety and well-being of patients in the workforce in their job descriptions. And that is such an important component of centering. So, Christine, I'm kind of curious if you might be able to comment on where you see national attention being encouraged for health system leaders to focus in on that, with the National Action Plan perhaps being one. Are there other areas like the Joint Commission standards that might be helpful for folks to hear about?
Yeah, definitely. Well, with the Joint Commission National Performance Goal for Workplace Violence, I think beyond staffing and administrative burdens, workplace violence remains a critical concern for the nursing workforce. And the Joint Commission's Patient Safety Goal on Workplace Violence underscores the importance of creating safe environments for both patients and staff. It's reported that one in four nurses in the U.S. report being assaulted. And we already know that there is even underreporting going on. That not only threatens the well-being of nurses, but also impacts their ability to provide compassionate and focused care. And addressing this issue really requires proactive and robust prevention programs. And one of the things that I absolutely love that came out of the pandemic, because, there's been talks about improving workforce well-being for years. But I think if there was one silver lining out of the pandemic was being able to amplify the importance of safeguarding our clinicians' well-being and highlighting what we have been advocating for years. And our experience during the pandemic also reinforced the need to move beyond temporary fixes and embed well-being into the organization's strategic plans. That's one of the biggest criteria for well-being excellence. And that's so it can remain front and center and not just make it a priority when there's crisis happening. And then another push for healthcare leaders as I do our global work is that there is a changing demographic of our workforce that's pushing the focus on well-being, because I can tell you that with the younger generations, they are intentionally looking for places that prioritize well-being and work-life balance. So creating structures and resources that support the workforce is no longer optional. It is essential for recruitment, retention, and also the organization's viability. So as you mentioned, the national plan is one of the drivers, the Joint Commission, the ANCC programs. We all are there to drive changes in those healthcare organizations. And the standards that we set are making that happen.
And they are, because to your point, Christine, what I see them doing is ensuring constancy of purpose.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why I like to frame safety and well-being as the purpose of the organization for patients, families, and those who care for them. Different from well-being as a project, and even different from well-being as a priority, and I'm making air quotes around that term, priority, because it's not necessarily something that gets funded, even if we say it's important. It doesn't necessarily get resourced as well. So, Christine, we have laid important groundwork now. And one of the things that I'm so excited to have the opportunity to illuminate is more about the Well-Being Excellence Credential. And I'm curious if you might share a little bit more about the imperative for creating the credential and provide us with some backgrounds on the origin and gaps. You started referencing a bit of that work earlier on, but let's take people through the whole design of the credential itself, so they understand just how thoroughly and thoughtfully developed this program is.
Yeah, so when we developed well-being excellence, it's actually to address several gaps that we were seeing in the environment. And I know I mentioned the National Plan for Improving Healthcare Workforce Well-Being. And when that was launched, many organizations agreed with the recommendations, but they often struggled with the practical aspect of implementation. That's when so many organizations came to us asking, where do we get started? What's the most important thing to implement? So well-being excellence bridges that gap by providing clear and actionable guidance. And then second, when we ask nurses, is there a focus on well-being at your organization? Many of them say, yes, our organizations are putting well-being initiatives in place. However, what they're saying is that the well-being initiatives that are present in the organization are either what's not important to them or it's not making a meaningful change. And then the third gap that we identified is that many organizations have those well-being programs but lack mechanisms to assess their effectiveness. And without assessment and validation, it's challenging for them to understand whether the well-being initiatives being implemented are actually making a meaningful impact to the nurses and the rest of the team. So for all those three reasons, ANCC developed the Well-Being Excellence Credential to be able to not only guide the implementation of well-being initiatives, but also provide a way for organizations to validate the effectiveness by directly asking the workforce for their perception of how things are going. Part of the design of the credential is having different tiers. Every organization is going to be on a different maturity level when it comes to their well-being journey. So we wanted this to be something that they can start out with by looking at the foundational elements. And then as they become more advanced, they can go from the bronze to the silver to the gold level. That includes the validation from the workforce, where we invite every single employee within the organization to be able to validate for us that those essential things are truly in place.
So, Christine, this is all music to my ears, too, because what you're creating is a blueprint, but also a continuous improvement opportunity for organizations that, to your point, might be starting out at a different place than other organizations. There's also a couple of things that are pretty special about this credential that I'd love for you to share with us, because some of the other credentialing programs have a different focus that is a little bit more specific to the nursing workforce. So tell us why it was important for ANCC to rethink what we were even credentialing as part of the organization, because this goes above and beyond nursing, right?
Yes, the two unique things about the credential, this is the first one that truly goes beyond nurses and not even just beyond the professions, because as I mentioned already, it's for the entire workforce. So think about your environmental services. Everyone within the organization is included. And that's because we know that when the well-being of the workforce is impacted, it affects the performance of everyone. And then the other thing that's truly exciting about this is that it goes beyond the clinical care settings. For years, we've had specialty like schools of nursing coming to us saying, we know about the magnet and the pathway to excellence recognition programs. Is there something that would actually apply to us? And happy to say that with the criteria and the way this has been developed, it's actually any organizations that employ at least one nurse is eligible. So that includes the schools of nursing, professional associations, insurance companies, I mean, you name it. The opportunities are really limitless.
The special sauce of this credential is around the fact that it is reflective of not just a single profession, but the organization. And we've talked about the importance of recognizing that well-being is a system property, ultimately. So what happens even within one unit or one element of the workforce does not necessarily mean that we have optimized the conditions for well-being to be meaningfully realized in the workforce. Can you walk through some framing of what organizations would do in order to become credentialed?
Yeah, so first of all, making sure that they meet the eligibility criteria, making sure that they employ at least one nurse within the organization. They have to have at least 10 employees at the workplace because, as I mentioned already, the third or highest tier is the gold tier, which requires a survey. So we want to make sure that we maintain the confidentiality of the participants. And then organizations also have to have a well-being champion or executive because they're the ones who truly have to advocate for resources that are required for this journey to be successful.
So, Christine, tell me a little bit more about where we're at right now. You mentioned the pilot program. How many organizations went through the pilot? How many already have received the credential? And tell us a little bit about what they look like and what their why was.
So we piloted the program with six organizations, and we were very intentional in looking at diverse settings. So we included an ambulatory division, a couple of health systems, BayCare and MedStar. We had a standalone children's hospital and an international organization that's in Australia, and a technology company with many remote employees. So there's a variety. And we were ecstatic that all of them achieved different levels of the credential. One achieved bronze level, four of them achieved silver, and the one and only gold tier was the healthcare software management company. And that told us a lot about the attainability in the different settings, but even most important, that the gold tier, which adds a lot of rigor to the appraisal process, is achievable even in those non-traditional settings.
Wow, that's incredibly impressive to see the diversity. And as we know, we've got nurses working everywhere in organizations with 10 or more people. So it shows great promise for the future of what the credential can be. Can you talk a little bit more about any of the common leadership characteristics among those six sites? What was it about it that you saw at the leadership level that really stood out?
Definitely high engagement, Patricia, because it has to start with a commitment and also the leaders role modeling the behaviors. So, in all of those six organizations, I do say that they are probably organizations that are leading the way when it comes to well-being, and it starts at the top.
You're listening to See You Now, episode 132, Safer Together, the Nurse Well-Being Imperative. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, executive producer for See You Now. Patricia McGaffigan, the Vice President of Safety at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, and Christine Pabico, the Senior Director of the American Nurses Credentialing Center's Pathway to Excellence and Well-Being Excellence Programs, have made the case for why well-being has to be a system property. Why a wellness app or a meditation room offered in isolation isn't the answer. And why organizations need a framework, accountability, and the kind of commitment that doesn't evaporate after a site visit. But frameworks don't build themselves. Someone has to decide. Someone has to walk into their chief nursing officer's office and say, "We need this." And then somebody has to actually do it. The ANCC Wellbeing Excellence Credential launched its pilot with six organizations, as Christine said, six very different places. They didn't all look the same. They didn't all start from the same place. But they shared what Christine just said is essential. Leaders who believed that the well-being of their people wasn't a nice to have. It was the work.
A lot of us often say that our patients are at the center of what we do. Everything we do is for our patients and families. But when you walk that back a little bit more, you realize that the healthcare professional, the clinician, the nurse, really needs to be well.
Simi King is the Director of Nursing Education and Professional Development at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., one of six pilot sites for the ANCC Wellbeing Excellence Credential.
So we're 155 years old this year, and we are the region's only freestanding pediatric hospital. We believe kids are everything. When you come into this environment, it is a space that's filled with people who are dedicated and committed not just to the patients that we care for in our four walls, but our entire community. And we're members of the community. That makes this a place where you want to deliver the very best for the children who are everything to receive the very best. So we have experts across so many specialties. We have a footprint in Maryland. We have a footprint in Virginia. We try to make sure that we are giving care to our patients and families so it's most accessible, that it's delivered in the language that they need to have it delivered in with our language services teams, that we are responsive to how care needs to be delivered by expanding our telehealth and remote care and connected care programs. And then when you walk in here, it's colorful and it's cheery and it's bright and people smile. And that's probably why I've been here since 1997, because it's an amazing place to work. Gosh, well-being, it is something that has been really at the forefront of our nursing practice and our nursing excellence journey at Children's for a very long time, well before more of a significant movement with regard to well-being over the last 5 years. We at Children's National in probably 2017 or 18 realized that in order for us to really achieve the type of outcomes that we were looking for with regard to our patient care, we really had to understand the relationship of nurse well-being with patient care outcomes. And as we redesigned our professional practice model, we actually put nurse well-being at the center with our patients and families. And so for us, the journey for well-being for nursing started back then, realizing the impact of a healthy nurse and the patient care outcomes that you can achieve by that. In 2021, I was asked if I had light duty work for a registered nurse at the floor level who had hurt herself and needed something to work on while she healed. And I was like, absolutely. I wanted to start wellness check-ins with all of our nurse residents. And so I asked her if she could meet with every one of our nurse residents one-on-one to just high-level document what she was learning from them. So she did that, and she had these one-on-one encounters with the nurse residents and was able to share feedback from their perspective of how they were doing, how they were transitioning into practice, how they were interacting with others, what was supporting them, what wasn't supporting them. And what I found was these one-on-one opportunities for feedback were different from what we had collected previously through evaluations or surveys, or even at the end of our PNR cohorts or nurse residency cohorts, we would do a SWOT analysis with them, but in a group. And the individual connection, some of them really opened up, and then subsequently they would reach out again to this nurse that was supporting that work. And what that led to was me saying, we really do need a nurse who's focused on the well-being of our nursing staff. And we were able to partner with our foundation and secure funding for a FTE in nursing for a program manager for nurse wellness who reports under my team. And since she's been in her role, just going on over 2 years now, She has been leading those one-to-one check-ins with the nurses, helping them navigate their way through their first year of nursing. The idea is that as an academic organization, one that believes in scholarship, that believes in research and believes in education and preparing the future workforce, those early engagement strategies are really critical. And to invest in our students as well as to invest in our future nurses is really important. So I think as an organization, we understand that there is a enterprise-wide approach to well-being, which often sometimes is resources or more generalizable resources. Then maybe there's discipline-specific opportunities, and through nursing, we look at that through maybe our program offerings that are unique to nursing. But there's also really individual touch points that are really necessary for some nurses to really flourish and thrive. With regard to the actual credential, the desire to assess ourselves as an organization holistically, I think it being the first interprofessional credential was something that I found to be very appealing because everybody on the healthcare team really needs to be well in order for the team to be optimal and function to its best capacity and be able to provide the best care. Also, the work that we had done at Children's, I did feel was at the forefront of a lot of well-being initiatives and the opportunity to assess ourselves against what their criteria was and be able to see what we could learn from that as well was also an opportunity. The idea of being part of the pilot was a lot for us to gain insight into our own organization's current state and our future journey, to be able to determine where we were with regard to the evidence around well-being, and to be able to continue the work with good insight into what a comprehensive program should look like. The credential gives you a blueprint of what areas of well-being we need to make sure we're addressing because it's easy to only look at it through a single lens. The system level approach to well-being will help drive enterprise-wide initiatives. And then as you drill into some discipline-specific or team-specific initiatives, that's actually something that I learned through the pilot is all of the initiatives that were occurring in departments or disciplines that I wasn't aware of. And then all of the things that were available to our whole system that I realized that other people weren't aware of, and how we needed to really think about how to share what works well for well-being with regards to the whole system versus a team or a department, and then help that spread appropriately across the organization so that everybody understands that the health of the organization is also dependent on the health of its people. And so we have to understand people's capacity, what work is, what does role and responsibilities look like. Those things are things you can define, but then it's also the relationships and how you treat people and do you create an environment in which others feel like this is a place I want to be at. And it's really a very comprehensive credential when you look at it, and it's very multifocal and it involves the whole system. And it supports the entire workforce in terms of the variability of things that are impacted or influenced by well-being. When you think about the quality of safety metric, when you think about the leadership engagement and stakeholder involvement, when you think about adding to the science or leveraging the evidence as your strategies for well-being are implemented. You think about workplace safety, you think about respite at work for meal breaks. All of it is really, it's a very comprehensive view of well-being. It's not very singularly focused by discipline or by a type of strategy or activity of well-being. So I think how that centers you as an organization is to recognize that it transcends the decision making with regards to space planning, with regards to how you're going to determine benefits for your organization, with regards to workforce budgeting and recruitment and retention with regard to policies and procedures for workplace safety or quality and safety strategies. It's woven through and should be discussed from a people and process lens, considering well-being of the people and how the process supports it. How we deliver care is going to continue to evolve, and the needs of our workforce will evolve concurrently. And so when I think about well-being, I think about a very adaptable and flexible work environment that allows every person to really flourish. And what I mean by that is that they feel safe where they work. They feel connected to where they are. They believe this is the right place for them. They belong in that space and they become their best self. And they are able to do whatever they're doing within that space the best that they possibly can. And for me, whether you're the greeting person at our front desk who smiles at every person they meet and gets to know them that way, to the parking attendant who's helping someone navigate our parking lot, to the nurse at the bedside or the direct observer sitting with a patient all day, everybody has a really important and unique role in our ecosystem when we deliver healthcare. And every person has the opportunity to thrive in that space. And I always use this concept of believe, belong, become. And I hope that every person has that feeling that I really believe that I'm doing the right thing for me and the right job for me. And I belong in this space and I'm going to thrive in this space and I'm going to become exactly who I'm supposed to be and be the best at it.
Nurse Simi King is the Director of Nursing Education and Professional Development at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., one of the six pilot sites for the ANCC Wellbeing Excellence Credential. About 1,000 miles south of Children's National in Washington, D.C., is Tampa Bay, Florida, home to BayCare Health System, one of the largest nonprofit healthcare systems in the region.
BayCare Health System is a not-for-profit academic health system. We are in West Central Florida in the Tampa Bay area.
Nikki Daly is the Chief Team Resources Officer at BayCare Health System.
The majority of our locations are in a 4-county going into 5-county area. We have 33,000 team members, 16 acute care hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, over 200 physician practice locations across our region, including urgent care, outpatient imaging. We are the leading behavioral health provider in our region as well.
BayCare has a diverse patient population. They care for all life stages, from newborns to seniors. And because of this broad network of services, their patients have a wide range of needs, including preventative care, chronic disease management, complex acute care, pediatric, adult trauma, and end-of-life services. And that complexity of care has really increased over the past several years. Trish Schakowsky, the Chief Nursing Executive at BayCare Health System, says sicker patients means more stress for the workforce.
We're seeing more tertiary level of care, so the patients are a little bit sicker, which is a little bit more challenging to our bedside nurses because they're seeing that higher complexity level of care. It's more stressful for our nurses, so we need to really support them as they're adapting to those more critical patients.
And that support was happening at BayCare. Even with its size and complexity, good work was being done. Real programs existed, but the pieces weren't connecting. The whole picture wasn't quite in focus yet. Nikki Daly.
We have always had a focus on wellness and the well-being of our team members. And we did have some silos, some fragmentation. It was actually Rocky who brought to my attention the ANCC Wellbeing Excellence Credential.
Rocky Hulk is an advanced professional development practitioner and nurse well-being lead for BayCare Health System.
My background really started in the military as a medic doing air medevac. Was deployed over into the Middle East during Desert Shield, Desert Storm. So that's really where I got my start in medicine, and then later became a nurse, and BayCare was really the place to work. With my current role now as the nurse well-being lead, I feel like it's really my time to give back to all the nurses and really be able to help these nurses not only survive in healthcare, but be able to thrive.
Again, Nikki Daly.
Through his process of really going through, gathering the information, doing that fact finding, understanding the well-being definition that was provided by the ANCC really helped us see that we had a really full, well-rounded well-being program across BayCare. We just need to work on pulling those pieces together even more.
Well-being is really addressing those emotional and the professional and, you know, really making sure that we have the psychological well-being of all of our team members. So that's where I've been putting a lot of effort in the last few years within BayCare and really excited to continue the movement.
And BayCare has seen some unexpected benefits from the credentialing as well. Trish Schakowsky.
Many have felt that it creates a stronger team environment. They feel more supported at work. They feel a sense of belonging. They, even the ones that are our seasonal pool who just come for, you know, 16 weeks to work at BayCare for 16 weeks and do a seasonal assignment during our months of surge, they feel that they're really embedded in the culture. They feel that sense of teaming, that sense of belonging.
One of the things about BayCare too is our executive leadership absolutely listens to what the team members are saying, and we put things in place to do that. We have a nurse well-being committee we meet monthly that has about 50 team members that are bedside team members that talk about that. And then that has a direct voice to Trish and the three CNOs. And we have a program that we're starting out, going out to not only all the hospitals, but all the employees, both clinical and non-clinical, to really talk to them face-to-face up front, not a survey, not just sending out a survey, but really talking to them, getting to know how do they define well-being, what do they want to see the organization, and then that's going right back to the executive committee. So, you know, our executive team really listens to our team members. And we also have other programs in places, as we know, new nurse graduates that are coming out of school, that's a highly stressful position and time for them. So we're looking out for their well-being too. And every one of our nurse graduates coming out of school and a new program that we piloted, now we're expanding that system-wide also, has a certified nurse coach with them for the first 6 months that they meet and be able to discuss and help through some of those strategies. So we're constantly looking at how can we evolve and how can we meet the needs of our team members and going to them.
Nikki Daly.
It's really exciting to see the outcomes of the work and the pilot work being done. Rocky and the team that are rolling out the stress first aid. On many of these units, they have had no first year turnover in nurses who have gone through that program. So that's really powerful to see that spending that time building those skills in our nurses really make a difference to the long-term success of the nurses in that unit and then to roll that out. So I think there are many more great things to come based off of the work that's already being done. It really has provided one justification of the work we're doing, that we are on the right track, that we're focusing on the right things, and has provided that structure for us to continue to evolve our well-being strategy. Well-being has always been a part of our strategic plan under our Extraordinary Workforce of the Future. But what we have done after receiving this recognition and credential is strengthen that and have a strategy really to continue to build and evolve well-being across BayCare. We have a leader who is under team resources who is going to drive that along with the help of Rocky. We're going out and doing listening sessions with our team members to understand what's working, how do they define well-being, and what else we need to focus on. So it really has given us that kind of excitement and building that momentum to strengthen this for our future. We know our workforce is changing. We have 5 generations in the workforce, so we really want to ensure that our well-being strategy and offerings are evolving as well.
Two organizations, two very different sizes, settings, and starting points. One, a pediatric hospital rooted in a community for over 155 years. The other, a sprawling health system serving 5 counties and 33,000 team members. And yet, what you heard underneath both of their stories was the same thing. Leaders who refused to treat well-being as a program to be launched and forgotten. People who understood almost intuitively that the health of an organization is only as strong as the health of its people, as strong and as safe. Christine Papico and Patricia McGaffigan.
Christine, I spend all of my time in patient safety, and we've spent many, many decades looking at the relationship between what happens and what the outcomes are with patients and families, with what's going on with the workforce. I'm curious if you might spend a few minutes just characterizing how this lands with you. When did it connect the dots for you in your career or in this work that well-being is fundamentally a safety issue?
Well, we definitely know that there's a lot of connections and correlations. There's decades of evidence showing that positive practice environments and also workforce well-being improves patient safety, quality outcomes, and retention. And we've seen that time and time again. We hear anecdotes from the chief nursing officers. We've done case studies amplifying the improvements that they're seeing. And then there's 4 new studies that have been published about Pathway to Excellence. And Pathway to Excellence is another evidence-based framework that actually has well-being as a dedicated standard. And what we have seen is that those organizations that put a focus on the well-being of the workforce and also the practice environment tend to have better nurse outcomes, tend to have better patient experience and better patient outcomes, which also equates to safer care for the patients.
I want to lift up that last point a little bit, Christine, because what we know is that, number one, patients and families see and their experience of care or their friction involved in trying to seek the best care possible is highly associated with what they see in the eyes and in the practice and in the teaming or lack thereof of the workforce. I think that's a really, really critical point. And one of the things that I think we're seeing universally, and I would imagine our leaders, our listeners are seeing as well too, is the human experience of care. Really is determining a lot of what organizations are now saying, oh, maybe we should pay attention to. It's not just about, did I leave the hospital or care setting without a physical healthcare acquired complication per se, but this whole definition of harm and the opposite of that, safety, has broadened to be inclusive of patients and families and their experience with physical and non-physical care and interactions, as well as the socio-behavioral impacts that are generated if they don't have a good experience of care or they see infighting. It's leading to a lot of documented changes in their willingness to recommend healthcare organizations and also to be able to even follow up on their own care. Because some of these issues that are pebbles or boulders in shoes have dramatic impacts on patients and families. I'm curious what you've learned in terms of some of the research that kind of aligns with that inextricable impact on patients and families.
Well, I think all of the research that's coming out now is making leaders realize that workforce well-being is not something that's a nice to have, but something that is truly critical to patient safety and workforce success. Because as I mentioned, recent research that has come out, it's shown more positive perception of the work environment. And for nurses, that is something that's truly important, because what's the biggest challenge that most healthcare organizations are experiencing is usually turnover and shortage. So this is again key to even retaining nurses in the workforce. And then some of the studies showing that it's improving patient outcomes and experience and also their willingness to recommend the hospitals. Those are things that are of high importance to organizations. And one of the things that I think this is bringing up, Patricia, is again highlighting that this is a systemic issue that requires systemic solutions versus just asking the individuals to become more resilient. It really requires organizational structure changes and also holding those organizations accountable. So I think that's one of the things that the credential brings. We talk about having it as a market differentiator, but I think it also helps leaders use well-being excellence as a way to hardwire well-being into their culture. They can use their commitment to well-being as then the market differentiator. When they can emphasize to the public that this is something that's important to them, then that becomes the market differentiator and what attracts people to want to work in that employment setting. I think one general thing that we're seeing with the well-being excellence is that success happens when they live the standards. This cannot be a checklist. And that's the reason why we even love the validation phase so much in both pathway and well-being excellence. It's a survey that the employees can do at the comfort of their home if they wanted to. They can be in a private space versus doing a site visit. Because what we have heard oftentimes from employees is that with the site visits, it's a time, of course, to brag about the great things, which is great. But the one thing that really hurts our hearts or disheartens us is when we hear employees say, but after the site visit, everything goes back to normal. And that's when I challenge the leaders and say, have you really changed the culture when your nurses are saying that? So that's the reason why we ask organizations to really prioritize the well-being of the workforce, always making sure that they are assessing what is happening. You know, we actually refer to positive practice environments, which is tied to well-being, as the other PPE, because it's just as essential in protecting our workforce. And one thing that I always emphasize is that unlike the masks and the gowns, where we can easily see when we're running short, burnout and well-being is not something that we can easily see. So it does require constant assessment and constant support of our workforce.
Yes, and that's why it's so important for accreditation and certification and credentialing work to be able to look for whether or not we've really made a meaningful and sustainable transformation. And this harkens to the whole framing that we take on in our work at IHI on constancy of purpose. Like this is not a one and done type of project that is going to get us to measurably and sustainably make a difference. It is the daily work of healthcare organizations to protect patients and families and those who care for them, and to be able to optimize care environments and conditions for everyone to thrive and have the best outcomes possible. Christine, share with us as we wind our conversation down a little bit about what your hopes are for the future of the well-being excellence credential and well-being in general.
I don't want organizations to take this wrong when I say focus on the workforce before you focus on the outcomes, because I think that's one of the things too that is causing a lot of frustration and stress among the workforce. If you put the people at the center and you put them first, they will actually be your best partners in making sure that you achieve those outcomes. And we have seen that time and time again. The one thing that I would love to see is for this well-being excellence framework to become the global standard for how organizations care for their workforce, that it becomes a core element. What I want is a healthcare landscape where well-being is hardwired into every decision, where leaders and frontline clinicians alike feel valued, safe, and supported. And I say leaders and frontline clinicians because another criteria in this credential is even making sure that we support the well-being of leaders. they have a huge job of creating the practice environment and creating the culture in the organization. But when you talk to the leaders, they are equally or probably even more stressed than the frontline employees. So I think that's another big gap that most organizations have, is not offering enough support for the leaders that they have. And I always say, we can't pour from an empty cup. And if we're expecting them to support the care team, we want to make sure that they're feeling supported as well.
Special thanks to Christine Pavico, Senior Director of the ANCC Pathway to Excellence and Wellbeing Excellence Programs, and to Patricia McGaffigan, Vice President of Safety at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and President of the Certification Board for Professionals in Patient Safety. Also, special thanks to Simi King, Director of Nursing Education and Professional Development at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., and from BayCare Health System, Nikki Daly, Chief Team Resources Officer, Trish Schakowsky, Chief Nurse Executive, and Rocky Houck, Advanced Professional Development Practitioner and Nurse Wellbeing Lead. Nurse Wellbeing is not a perk, a program, or a priority that can be toggled on and off in times of crisis. It is a system property, as essential to safe care as any clinical protocol, and it demands the same rigor, investment, and constancy of purpose that healthcare organizations bring to patient safety itself. The ANCC Wellbeing Excellence Credential offers organizations a powerful framework to move from intention to accountability. And the stories from Children's National and BayCare remind us that when well-being is woven into the fabric of an organization, everyone, nurses, teams, patients, and families are better for it. The path forward is promising, but it requires leaders to look honestly at what is actually happening inside the organizations, not just on the day of the site visit, but every day. The work is not finished when the credential is earned. It has only just begun. You can find this episode and the full Safer Together series wherever you listen to podcasts or at seeyounowpodcast.com. If this conversation resonated with you, please share it with a colleague, a healthcare leader, or anyone who cares about the people who care for us. For See You Now, I'm Rebecca McEnroy. Thanks for listening. Nurses are transforming healthcare through innovation, compassion, and leadership. And Johnson & Johnson is proud to continue its 125-year commitment to champion nurses through recognition, skill building, leadership development, and more. The American Nurses Association is dedicated to building a culture of innovation. Nurses improve the lives of patients and communities through innovative thinking, empathetic connection, scientific rigor, and sheer determination. ANA is proud to support and advocate for our nation's most valuable healthcare resource, our nurses. For more information on See You Now, visit seeyounowpodcast.com and listen to any of the earlier episodes in our library wherever you get podcasts.